All right, Shavuot, say good morning. It is an incredible school. It's Baruch Hashem to be able to learn with you today. I'm sorry that I can't be with you in person, but at least in Meretz Hashem, we have the opportunity to still learn together, albeit virtually. So today's daf is Ayin Beis 72, and we are picking up in Meretz Hashem on Ayin Aleph Amud Beis 71b, and we are picking up Rav Ashi Amar, which is 2, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, about 17 lines up from the bottom. So now the Gemara is going to pick up. Remember again, the Gemara kind of went off a little, not on a tangent, but the Gemara was trying to explain a case. And in the midst of explaining that case, the Gemara dropped the concept that there is no shlichos for an akum, that there's no concept of agency when it comes to a non-Jew. Gentiles. The Gemara says, Rav Ashi Amar, ki amrinan ein shlichos lenochri hani mili b'truma. So Rav Ashi says like this. When do we say that there's no shlichos for an akum, that there's no halachic construct of agency? That's dafka by truma. In other words, I can't appoint a non-Jew to separate truma from my produce on my behalf. But Rav Ashi says it's only a din by truma. We'll see why truma is unique. But by the rest of Torah, you absolutely could appoint a Gentile as your agent. The Gemara says, by the way, Rav Ashi's concept is a mistake. Rav Ashi's wrong. So the Gemara says, Maishna Truma Dolo. So first of all, what would be unique about Truma? That Allah says there's no agency by Truma. Dechsev Atem Gam Atem. As Abba said, the Pasuk by Truma says as follows. Kein Tarimu Gam Atem Trumas Hashem Nikomas Roseichem. So the Pasuk says that Gam Atem, also you, will separate out Truma. So the Gemara says, Ma Atem Bnei Bris. So remember, generally, Gam, the word Gam is a ribuy. It comes to include something else. So Gam Atem is coming to include something on top of Atem. So what does that mean? Ma Atem Bnei Bris, just like you, right? We're Jewish. Af Shluchachem Nami Bnei Bris. So to again, your agents have to be members of the covenant as well, have to be Jews as well. Incredible. So the Gemara says, furthermore, Shlichos Techala Torah Kula Nami Mitruma Gamrin Allah. And by the way, Truma becomes the paradigm. Just like by Truma, there is no agency for an akum. A non-Jew can't be the agent of a Jew for separation of Truma. It's not just unique by Truma, but it's the entire Torah. A non-Jew cannot act as the agent of a Jew. Elad Rav Ashi Berusi. So therefore, Rav Ashi's original statement, namely, that the concept of ein shlichos la'akum, that there's no agency for a Gentile, Rav Ashi said, only applies to Truma, doesn't apply to anything else. The Gemara now says that's a mistake. There is no halachic construct of agency by a Gentile for a Jew in any area of halacha. And I will say, just the logic, it's actually intuitive, right? The logic is shlucho shel adam kimoso, right? The concept of shlichos is that mashliach, my agency, is an extension of myself. As such, in order for my agent to be an extension of me, the agent has to have some shared identity as I do. And therefore, because obviously, again, a Jew and non-Jew have two different identities, therefore, again, ein shlichos la'akum. A Jew cannot appoint a nochri to fulfill a formal halachic shlichos. Igadar, an alternate version of this, Amar Ashi, ki aminan ein shlichos la'nochri. So Ashi is like this, when we say that there's no shlichos for a nochri, hani mili inhu lididon. So that's ultimately, again, that a nochri, a non-Jew, can't serve as my agent. Avalanon lidido havinu luhu shliach. But so Nachri can't serve as my agent, but I can serve as a Nachri's agent. Vahad Rav Ashi Berusa, the Gemara says, but this is also a mistaken statement. Maishna inu lididon dolo. So we'll say, so why can't a Nachri serve as my agent? Because the pasuk says, Atem gam atem l'rabo shluchachem. Ma atem b'nebris af shluchachem b'nebris. So Rabbi says, but they're not from Truma. Right? The pasuk, the phrase Atem, you could separate that Truma. Gam Atem, you could appoint an agent, but your agent has to be like you, i.e. Jewish. So the Gemara says, Anan lididahu nami ma Atem b'nei bris ka'amar. So Sefer Rabbi say, again, this works both ways. The Gemara says, just intuitively, if I can't appoint a Nochri as my Shaliach, then by definition, I can't go ahead and fulfill agency for the Nochri either. Ella, had Rav Ashi Berusa. Rather, again, ultimately, again, Rav Ashi's statement was a mistake. Okay, so we'll say, so that's the two versions of Rav Ashi. Good, so fine. Ravina introduces a new idea. He says, Nihi the shlichos lenochri, lesle, zichim edirabanan isle. So Rabbi said, this is actually very interesting. The Gemara says, you're right. Ravina agrees, essentially, with the Gemara's first refutation of Rav Ashi, which is, there's no shlichos for a nochri. There's no formal halachic construct of agency when it comes to a nochri. However, again, this is actually very interesting, but the Gemara says, Zichia midrabanan isle. But a Nachri does have almost a rabbinic right of acquisition. What does this mean? Take a look at Rashi. Zichia midrabanan isle. Shehe Yisrael zochel etzorech Nachri. Hilchach ahu Yisrael zochel namli midrabana ba'avazu miYisrael. So Avinu posits as follows. Although midoraisa, there is no concept of shlichos by a Nachri, but Chazal gave certain abilities for a Jew to transact certain things on, to acquire something for the Nachri. So there's no shlichos, but Chazal gave certain rights of acquisition for the Jew to acquire something on behalf of the non-Jew. Midi dehavi akatan. Because in this respect, a Nachri should be no different than a katan. How so? This is actually very interesting. So katan, lav af agav de les le shlichos. Now remember, a katan can't appoint the shaliach, right? The katan doesn't have the ability to create shlichos. Yet, top of ayin beis, 72a, yet isle zichia midrabanan. Yet, interestingly enough, one is able to acquire something on behalf of a katan. So you see from the Gemara in making this interesting idea that it could be that someone is not shayach to the halachic construct of shlichos. So a particular individual can't be an agent, or no one can act in an agent capacity for him, but there's a concept of zichia. Zichia means someone has the ability to acquire something on your behalf. The paradigmatic example of this, a katan, a minor, can't create a shliach, yet someone could acquire something on his behalf. Ha'achanami loshna, marasim mei by a nochri, the same halacha. So a nochri, there's no shlichos by a nochri, but perhaps someone has the ability to acquire something on his behalf. To which the Gemara says, Hachanami, Loshna, Velohi. The Gemara says, not a good comparison. I'll tell you why. Yisrael da asi lechla shlichos, akum lo asi lechla shlichos. It's very different. You see, a katan, right now, he can't appoint a shaliach because he's disqualified by age. But he'll get older, and once he becomes older, he's automatically included in the halachic construct of shlichos. An akum is never going to be included in the halachic construct of shlichos. So because of that, we can't give the Akum zichia powers, right? We can't allow a Jew to acquire, halachically, to acquire something on his behalf as well. Very interesting. Tana Rabbanan. Let's go by there. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nihyeh b'tvaro. Okay, so I will say, so by the way, just so you should know, the way we paskin is that halach l'maisa in shlichos l'nachri. We paskin that halachically, there is no formal halachic construct of agency from a Jew to a Gentile or a Gentile to a Jew. And again, it's learned out from the concept of truma. Now again, we'll say, obviously, I can do something for a Nachri, Nachri can do something for me. But it's my shlichos, right? Remember again, when we know shlichos is not somebody just doing you a favor. Shlucho shal adam kimoso, a shaliach is empowered to really act in place of the principal. That concept only applies by Jews, doesn't apply ultimately again between Jews and non-Jews. Incredible. But it's a very interesting case. Tana Rabbanan. Yisrael shalava maos min ha-Nachri, beribis. Very interesting case here. A Yisrael borrowed money from a non-Jew with ribis. Mutter, right? We paskin that Jews and non-Jews could lend with interest to each other. Okay, so now let's play this out. Ruvain borrowed money from Nachri, and he borrowed with interest. Fine. V'zakfan Allah b'milva. Now, something interesting happened afterwards. So let's say Ruvain borrowed $5,000 from Nachri and $1,000 interest. So now the whole thing came due. So what Nachri essentially did is they rewrote the note. They rewrote the note, and the note was rewritten as Ruvain owes Nachri $6,000. They consolidated the entire debt. So essentially, they converted interest plus principal just into one payment of principal. Okay, look at Rashi. V'zakfan Allah b'milva. La'achar zman chishev imo ala ribis. V'zokev hakol biyachad b'milva. V'kasov lo shtar aleim kach v'kach ani chayev l'ploni. So essentially, they rewrote a new loan document. But again, they consolidated the principal and the interest into one document. Okay, now watch. So far, no problem. Now watch this. V'nisgayar. Oh, now the Nachri converts. So Nachri becomes Shimon. So now Shimon has in his hand a note, a loan document, that says that Reuven owes him $6,000. Now remember again, that $6,000 is really a combination of principal and interest. So the shaila now is, does Shimon have the ability to collect the money or not? What a great case. So the Gemara says it depends. Im kodim shiniskayir zakfan ala b'milva, goves hakaren v'goves haribis. If they will call it a loan conversion, right, combining or consolidating principal and interest into one loan, if that took place before Shimon converted. Then ultimately, again, Shimon has the ability to collect the entire debt before, after he converts. Ve'im la'achar shenis gayer, however, if halacha l'maisa, the debt consolidation or debt conversion, loan conversion, took place after Shimon converted. So Shimon converted. Then they transformed the 5,000 principal, 1,000 interest into a new $6,000 debt. Then again, then halacha l'maisa, Shimon could collect principal, but he can't collect interest. Very interesting. So I will say the reverse case as well. Listen to this. Let's watch this. Ruvain lent, this is case two. Ruvain lent Nachri money with interest. He lent Nachri $5,000 with $1,000 interest. Okay. Same case. Then afterwards, they go ahead and they consolidated the debt into a loan of $6,000 and they put it into a new document. And this is what Nachri owes Ruvain. Now we'll see what happens. Minis Gaia. Oh, now Nachri converts. So the Gemara says, it's really the same halacha. Im achlo niskayer zak fanal b'milva, goves kerem v'goves haribis. So if the debt conversion, if the loan conversion took place before Nachri converted, then ultimately, again, Reuven has the ability to collect the entire amount, principal and interest. Im mishin niskayer zak fanal b'milva. However, if halacha l'maisa, the debt conversion, debt consolidation took place after Nachri converted, then goves kerem v'na goves haribis. Then halacha l'maisa, Reuven has the ability to collect the principal, but not the interest. Now I'll say, watch this. Rabbi Yossi says, absolutely not. Nachri shalava ma'os mi yisrael beribis, ben kach u ben kach gove es hakeren ve gove es haribis. Rabbi Yossi says, not true. In a case where a Jew lent a Nachri money, and then they did this debt conversion, whether the debt conversion occurred before Nachri converted or after Nachri converted doesn't make a difference. Reuven has the ability to collect the entire amount. What's the pshat? Amarava, Amarav Chista, Amarav Huna. Halacha Rabbi Yossi. Halacha was Rabbi Yossi. So the Gemara says, Amarava, my time, Rabbi Yossi. What's Rabbi Yossi's logic? Kedesh shelo yomru b'shvil ma'osav niskayerza. Wow. So Rabbi Yossi, here's what we're concerned about. We're concerned that if a Nachri knows that if he converts, he's able to get out of certain interest payments depending on how the debt consolidation took place, then we're concerned that he will convert for the wrong reasons. So what do we do? In order to go ahead and take away that concern, the halacha is if Reuven lent Nachri money and then reconsolidated the debt into one comprehensive debt, whether he did that before Nachri converted or after Nachri converted, Reuven is entitled to collect the entire amount in order not to cast any aspersions on the conversion of Nachri, right? That people shouldn't think that he converted just in order to avoid the debt. Okay, incredible. But that being said, the first part still remains in effect. So halacha l'maisa, if you have a situation of the Jew who borrowed from the non-Jew, right? So Reuven borrowed from Nachri and then again reconsolidated the debt and then Nachri converts. Can Nachri collect the entire amount or not? It depends. With debt consolidation took place before his conversion, then Nachri could collect the entire amount. If debt consolidation ultimately took place after Nachri, now known as Shimon, converted, he could collect principal, not interest. Again, if it's a situation of a Jewish lender and a Gentile borrower, whether the consolidation took place before the conversion or after the conversion, either way, Reuven, the Jewish lender, could collect the entire amount. Incredible. Tana Banan, Shtasha Kasubo Ribis Konsino, so the Inagova Loasa, Karen Veloas, Rabbis Ramir. So we'll say, okay, so now we're going to get into some interesting technical issues over here. Let's say you have a situation of a document that has Ribis, right? So Reuven lent Shimon $5,000 and in it is $1,000 of interest. Okay, so now, illegal document. The Shaila is the document usable for anything? Rabbi Meir says, no. The document essentially is invalid and the document cannot be used to collect principal nor interest. Pretty incredible. So the Gemara says as follows. Hacham say, no. You could use the document to collect principal, you just can't use it to collect interest. I says the Gibar B'Maikim and Flagis, what are they arguing about? Rabbi Meir Savar, Kansinan Hetera Mishum Isura. So essentially, here's the machlokas. Amir says like this: although technically speaking, you should be able to use this document to collect principal, but we're canassing you, we're penalizing you. You did something wrong, you did something inappropriate, and we're concerned that if we let you use the document to collect principal, you're going to end up trying to use the document to collect interest as well. Therefore, we penalize you. You can't use the document to collect anything. The Rabbanan is saying, no, we don't say that. We don't say that. Again, you can't collect the interest because that's a void part of the document, but you absolutely could collect principal with this document. Incredible. And Lashon of Kansinan Hetera Atresura, that should we penalize you in terms of preclude you from collecting the part that is permitted, lest you come to collect the part that is prohibited. Tanan Hasan, we learned there. Shtarichov Hamukdoshin. Hamukdamin Psulin Vamukharn Kshen. So we'll say this is a really interesting. So you actually saw this a little bit in our Ksuvas days as well. There's something called the Shtar Muktam. A Shtar Muktam means that a document that is dated earlier than the actual transaction. So for example, let's say today is the first day of Iyar. Second day of Iyar. And now what happens? So Reuven is lending Shimon $10,000. If Reuven dates the document instead the 25th of Nisan, then what's the problem? The date on a document, loan document, creates a lien against the borrower's real property. If it's dated early, that backs up the lien, which is unfair because let's say Shimon sold off some property between the 25th of Nisan and the 2nd of Iyar. That property, technically speaking, is unencumbered. Yet when you look at the document on the date, it looks like a shtar muktam, right? When you look at the document on the date, when you look at the date in the document, it'll give the lender the ability to collect from an earlier date where he doesn't really have an entitlement, thereby defrauding people who bought property legally and free of any encumbrances from Shimon. So therefore the halacha is what we call a shtar mukdam, a predated document, the document dated early in the actual transaction is pasul. Conversely, v'hameucharin ksherin. What about a document, a post-dated document? So in other words, let's say we transact this deal on Bay's ER, but yeah, I write the date, right? The transaction is happening Bay's ER, but instead we date it for the 10th of ER. So we'll say, here's what's interesting about that. The only person that puts it at disadvantage is the lender, because that means then the lender just has a later lien. If the lender is willing to accept that and it doesn't matter to him, if it doesn't matter to him, it doesn't matter to us. And that's absolutely fine. So we'll say, first white line, mukdam and amay psulin. So why is the shtar mukdam? Why is a predated document possible? Nihi de lo gavo mizman rishon, nigvo mizman sheni. I don't understand. So fine. You can't go ahead and collect based on, when we say collect, let's say in the event that it's a loan and the borrower defaulted. So now again, the lender is going to be able to collect encumbered property. So I understand you can't use the date in the document. But why can't you at least go ahead and use the actual date of the transaction, even though it's not recorded in the document? If we know the date of the transaction, that's when the encumbrances began. Rabbi Meirhi. Because we'll say ultimately, again, this is a machlokes, and this is reflective of the view of Rabbi Meir. Now remember again, where does Rabbi Meir hold? Rabbi Meir holds kansinan hetera atar isura. Essentially, Rabbi Meir says it like this. When you have a flawed document, essentially once the document is flawed, either because, like in this case, it's predated, or for example, again, like we saw earlier on, it has ribis in it. And Meir says, we don't let you use the document. We don't let you use the document because we're gonna penalize you, even regarding the permitted parts of the document, lest you come to go ahead and use the document in an illegal and inappropriate fashion. So if Rabbi Meir says, shtar muktam, not good at all. Rabbi Yochanan says, afil tim rabbanon. The truth is, no, this, even the rabbanon would agree in this case. Why? Gzera shema yigba mizman rishon. Because they both say, this is dangerous. This is actually dangerous. To have a predated document with a document ultimately, again, that has an earlier date, you really could mess people over with that. And even the rabbanon would agree that Allah lemaisa, such a document is not good. I must say, by the way, that is how we paskin. We paskin that a shtar mukdam is going to go ahead and be possible. You know, this comes up. This is why when doing a chasana, we're very careful to make sure that the date on the ksuva is the same date as the chuppah, in order to avoid any potential shtar mukdam issues, right? Because let's say if Chasen and Kala get married, or let's say they write the ksuba by day, but the chuba doesn't take place until that night, technically speaking, the shibud, the lien created by the ksuba, starts by day, but yet ultimately the marriage doesn't occur by night. So try very carefully to make sure that everything is aligned with each other. Okay, Hu Gavra, the Mashkinli Pardes Lachare. So we'll say a very interesting case here. There was an individual who went ahead and Dimashkinli Pardes Lechavre. He collateralized a pardes, an orchard, to his friend. So in other words, so Reuven lent money to Shimon, and Shimon gave Reuven a pardes, an orchard as collateral. Achla tlas shani. So now what happened? So remember again, so now Reuven the lender used the field for 3 years. Okay, so what happened? Amarle, imizabnis le nehele mutov ve'i lo kavshina le lishtar mashkanta va'amina laku chibiyadi. I suppose it's an incredible case. So Reuven the lender, has been using the field for 3 years. At the end of 3 years, he goes over to Shimon Sisho, and here's the deal. Sell me the orchard. If you don't sell me the orchard, I'm gonna tear up the collateral document. So no one will know that this field was with me as collateral. And instead, the only thing they'll see is that I utilized it for 3 years. Now remember again, using property for 3 years is enough to establish chazaka. So essentially, Reuven was threatening Shimon, sell me the property, and if you don't sell me the property, essentially I'm going to take it illegally by claiming that I have a chazaka and you didn't contest to my usage of it for 3 years. Azal kam akne libno katan, bahadir zamnele hili. So we'll say, so what? So now, what did Shimon do? So Shimon did something very interesting. Shimon's like, okay, you want to do that? Here's what we're going to do. Shimon gifted the orchard to his son. So let's imagine for a moment that, right, this is happening on Beis Iyar. So Shimon gifted the orchard to his son, and he wrote a gift document, the shtar, dated on the 2nd of Iyar, I, Shimon, gifted this orchard to my son. He then wrote, then sold it to, quote unquote, sold it to Reuven. But Reuven's shtar was dated Gimel Iyar. So therefore, I will say, it turns out that there's documentation that a gift was given before the sale, which means that by definition, the sale is void. This is how Shimon prevented Reuven from forcing him to sell the property. So the Gemara says, So obviously it works. In other words, that obviously the sale, quote unquote, the sale from Shimon to Reuven never took effect. Why? Because the gift from Shimon to his son took effect first. The Gemara says, Zuze kimova bishtar damo v'gavo b'nechasim mishubadim, odilma kimova al pet damo v'enakova b'nechasim mishubadim. So here's what's interesting. What about the price? Remember again, so Reuven was forcing Shimon to sell. He wasn't trying to, I mean, I guess it's theft. It is theft, right? It's chamas, actually, right? Forcing someone to sell something. But lamaisa, so Reuven paid money. So now I understand that the sale's not going to go into effect because ultimately the gift document from Shimon to his son preceded the sale document from Shimon to Reuven. So therefore the sale is void. Shaz, what about the money? So obviously now Shimon has to get back the money. Shimon owes Reuven the money. How do we view that debt? Is that considered to be a debt that is recorded in a document and therefore it's secured by real property? Or maybe it's just a verbal debt, right? The verbal loan, and therefore not secured by real property. Amar Abaye, v'lav hainud Rabbi Yasi. Is this not the very case of Rabbi Yasi? Amar Rabbi Yasi said, I will say, Ayin Beis Amud Beis 72b. Rabbi Yasi said, Mode b'shtar shekasvu, the government of Hasim Mishabadim. So we'll say in a case, ultimately again, where the parties agree, right? Rashi says over here, Mode Bishtar Shakasu, Me'achar Shehilva Shalova Mode, Shishtar Chov, Shahotia Love Shtar Emesu, Enam Avatar Lachser Achar Etimachasunabo. Now, generally, if the borrower admits that, yes, he admits to the document, he admits to the transaction recorded in the document, then there's no need for kiyum shtaris. There's no need to certify the document. So again, I will say here, in this case over here, Shimon is admitting that he wrote the document to Reuven. He is. So therefore, the document is about, quote unquote, the document that even though the sale is void, the document is the document. And Shimon is admitting that he sold the document, that he wrote the document. As such, the money, right, that now Shimon owes Reuven, which was the purchase price that Reuven paid for the sale that was subsequently void because it was preceded by a gift from Shimon to his son. So that money now that Shimon owes Reuven is considered to be a loan recorded in a document and therefore, again, should be secured by Shimon's real property. Amrle Rava Midami, come on, how can you compare that? Hasam Nitanli Kasev. That's different because I will say in general, that case that we're talking about over there, the Modu Bishtar Shakasfu, is talking about a case where the actual transaction occurred and everyone agrees that the transaction occurred. Here, about say this transaction should have never been written down to begin with. Why should this transaction have never been written down to begin with? Because remember, halacha lemaisa, there was no real sale over here. Remember, Shimon gifted the property to his son even before he ever sold it to Reuven. As such, there's no real sale. So because there's no real sale, therefore the document itself is a void document. And although Shimon, of course, has to pay back Reuven, the money that Reuven paid Shimon for the orchard, but it's considered to be a verbal loan, and therefore, again, it is not secured by real property. Incredible. Yosav Meimar v'kamer lo ha-shmaito. So Meimar was sitting and giving over this ruling. Amar li Ravina l'Meimar. Elo hado amar Rabbi Yochanan. Gzeira shema yigba mizman rishon. So we'll say, so one second. What about the concern that Rabbi Yochanan brought up? That ultimately, again, in a predated document, maybe the person is going to use the actual date recorded in the document itself, and thereby defraud purchasers. Neima lo nitin likasev. Why don't we say such a document should have never been written to begin with? Amar le hachi hashda hasam nehid lo nitin likasev mizman rishon, aval nitin likasev mizman sheni. They both say, in the shtar muktam case, the predated get, that was the transaction itself was a valid transaction. And it should have been committed to writing. It's not a transactional issue. It's a date issue. Hacha lo nitin likasev klal. In this case, this is the right. Reuven and Shimon, the forced sale of the orchard. That document should have never been written. The whole thing was inappropriate. And furthermore, again, it was already gifted away before the item was actually sold. So therefore, the document itself is totally and wholly void. Ela hadasanya. But that which we learn, the shevach karkos ketzad. So we'll say, so again, remember, that which we learned, that is Shevach Karkos. Now we'll say, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, Shevach Karkos, Reisha Didei, Ein Motziel Achilas Peros of the Shevach Karkos, Min Nechasim Mishibadim, Mibnei Tikona Olam. So we'll say, so the halacha is that in seized property, so when it comes ultimately, again, to Shevach Karkos, if let's say, again, the person who was in possession of the property improved it, we don't go ahead and extract payment for that for improvements from the Chasim Mishubadim. So what's the case? And the Gemara's name, what's the case? Ketzad, Harisha Gazal. So it was actually quite a fascinating case. Harisha Gazal Sada Mechabero. Listen to this. Reuven stole a field from Shimon. Umachra La'achar. And after Reuven stole it from Shimon, he sold it to Levi. Vishbicha, and Levi improved, right? Levi worked on the field, he improved the field. Vahari hi yosei mitachas yado. So now what happens? So remember, Reuven stole it from Shimon. So Reuven stole it from Shimon, and afterwards, again, he sold it to Levi. Levi improved the property. Shimon finds out that Levi is now in possession of his property. Shimon goes to Levi and seizes back his property, which he has the right to do so. Now, of course, what's going to happen? So Levi is going to go back to Reuven for really two things. Number one, the purchase price. And number two, what we call the shevach, the improvements that he made. We'll say first wide line, 72b. So the Gemara says, V'hari yozit mitachas yado, kishu goveh goveh sakar minachasim mishubadim. So ultimately, again, when Levi comes to Reuven to collect money, so for Karen, for principal, he could collect from encumbered property, from real property. But ultimately, again, for any improvements, he could only collect that from unencumbered property, or again, property that Reuven himself still owns. By Bnei Chorin, at the end of the day, this document should have never been written, right? Because remember, again, Reuven wrote a document of sale to Levi for property that Reuven didn't own. So why don't we say that Halacha L'maaseh, this is an example of a shtar that should have never been written. The Gemara says, Hachi Hashta Hasam. This is very interesting. Ilaman D'Amar Nechale D'Lona Kari Gazlana. So I will say, this is, the Lashon Avir is so fascinating. That ultimately, again, usually what ends up happening, the Gemara says, is like this. When Reuven steals the field from Shimon and subsequently goes ahead and sells it to Levi, so what's going to end up happening, the Gemara says, is that Reuven is going to go and do his best to try to actually purchase it from Shimon. Why? Because Reuven doesn't want to be called the thief. Okay? And therefore, again, Aloha Lamaisa, he's going to want to kind of straighten this, even though he made a mistake and he stole the property, but he's going to want to straighten this out to that he shouldn't have the identity of a thief. Or I must say, ultimately, again, Reuven wants to be known as a trustworthy guy. And therefore, once again, he's going to go ahead and try to figure things out with Shimon. Rashi says, "Over mafis leva marei lo chamin abaylam harishonim," to which the Gemara says, "Hacha laavruche minei kamechavin shtar mekayim le." So what the Gemara is making is the following distinction: in the case of the forced sale of the orchard, the whole chap over there is the document of sale that Shimon made to Reuven. The whole thing was false. In other words, Shimon never meant to sell it to Reuven. Shimon never wanted to sell it to Reuven at all. There's no sale document. The document itself is false. In these other cases, interestingly enough, when Reuven steals from Shimon and then sells it to Levi, the Gemara understands over here that at some point in time, Reuven is going to try to do good by Shimon. He's going to pay him, he's going to smooth it over, he's going to take care of the theft, right? Why? Because Reuven doesn't want to be called a gazlan, right? Or Reuven doesn't want to be called, you know, dishonest. So therefore, again, he'll make amends ultimately again with Shimon in some way. I will say, it's such a tremendous Gemara, right? Think about this in just a moment, right? Reuven steals from Shimon, sells it to Levi. So now, remember, and then Levi improves the property. So again, by the way, the halacha in that case is as we mentioned it over here, which is that when it comes to principal, so principal ultimate, so in other words, principal, when Levi comes back to Reuven, right? Because Shimon goes to Levi, takes back his property, Levi comes back to Reuven. So now Reuven owes Levi two things. Number one, principal, right? And number two, shevach, any improvements. Principal comes from even nechasim mishvat, even encumbered property of Reuven's, but shevach, improvements, only comes from unencumbered property. Fine, that's the halacha. What's interesting over here is that the Gemara says, Reuven, who stole from Shimon, at some point in time, he's gonna do good by Shimon. He doesn't want to be called a thief. If you don't want to be called a thief, don't steal. Right? So I mean, he doesn't want to be called a thief. He is a thief. Now the Rabbi will say, what do you see from here? You see from here that at the end of the day, the Yid, the Jew, I don't want to be a Rasha. I don't want to be a Rasha. I don't want to be known for my mistakes or for my misdeeds. It's not what I want. And even when I make those mistakes, even when I make those wrong turns in life, I do not want them to categorize me. I don't want them to characterize me, excuse me. I don't want those to be the things that concretize my identity. I'm a good person, but I'm a good person who does bad things. But the whole chap is, I don't want those bad things to define me. The gazlan, right, the thief, what is the thief most worried about? The thief doesn't want to be known as a thief. Very simple, it's a don't steal. No, but he's going to steal. He's going to steal because that's what thieves do. They steal and we make mistakes. But what I want more than anything is not to be defined by my mistakes. And I will say, think about this. This is what we say to the Ribbono Shel Olam each and every day, right? That I know I make mistakes and I know I make so many wrong turns in life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm asking you not to see me through the lens of those mistakes and misdeeds. I'm asking you to see me through the good. I'm asking you to see me through the beauty. You, the Bochim Levi Lavos, you who are able to look into the heart of man, you know what's really in my neshama, what's really in my soul. Such an incredible idea. A Jew wants to be holy. And a Jew does not want to be a Baal Avera or a Baal Chet. I want to be a Baal Tshuva. I want to be a Tzaddik. I want to be Helig. I want to be holy. I want to be Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. That's all I want. But yet at the same time, I live with all of my frailties. The Gazlan doesn't want to be a Gazlan. And so somehow, some way, he's going to find a way to work it out. Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know that even with all of my mistakes, that's not who I want to be. Who do I want to be? I want to be a tzaddik. I want to be holy. I want to be elevated and I want to be special. Incredible. What's that? Mishnah, here we go. So actually, this Mishnah is going to be good chazara because now, Bosai, we're actually coming back to the concept of psika ala peros. So remember again, this is how we actually started Ezun Neshech. So psika ala peros means a future contract. So in a very simple case, right, Reuven goes to Shimon and sells Shimon wheat, and he sells him $10,000 of wheat. So Shimon pays now, but is going to take delivery of the wheat in 6 months from now. That's psika ala peros. So we lock in a price. Purchaser gives the seller the money, and seller delivers the produce at some future date. Says the Mishnah, in poskin ala peros at sheyetze ashar. I will say the halacha is that you can't do a future forward contract for produce unless, of course, the price is known. We've seen this already before. Yatzah Ashar, the price has to be known. Now, what's the logic of that? Why? Because since the price is known, because even though, right, Reuven is selling this to Shimon. So Reuven right now doesn't have any wheat. However, even though Reuven doesn't have, Reuven can get from Levi. So because of the produce is readily available and the price is known, even though the seller himself doesn't have it, he could easily obtain it. So it's as if Shimon already has possession of the wheat. And therefore, again, no potential ribbis issue. I was saying, remember again, the issue we're concerned about over here with Psika Lapera, so the future forward contract, is that Reuven is going to go ahead and buy $10,000 worth of wheat at current prices. But let's say again, then there's fluctuation. So like this, the Gemara says, as long as the price is known, which also means that the produce is readily available. So therefore it's as if Shimon has already taken possession, even though he has not taken physical possession of the grain. Incredible. Hayuhu tchila lekotzrim. What happens if Reuven was one of the early harvesters? See, he's one of the first chaver that's harvesting, which means that there's not yet a set price. Posek imo alagodish. Ultimately, I will say, this is what we call yeshlo. So now Reuven could go ahead and make any price he wants with Shimon. Why? Because Reuven has the produce. So essentially, Allah Alamaisa, since Reuven already has the produce, they could agree on a price. And even though, again, Shimon's not going to take possession of it until sometime later on, it's okay, because Reuven has the actual produce right now, which means it's a ki'ilu that Shimon has it. Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, posek imo, ve'ezeshar shiyirtza, loses lo me'osa godish. So, and they could agree on whatever price they agree to. Techevan di'yeshlo, since Reuven has the produce, ein kan ribis. There's no ribbis issue. Why is there no ribbis issue? Dimei achshav hu kanui lo, because Shimon effectively acquires the grain now. Yafa bishul amashach, even though again Shimon didn't do mashicha, he didn't take physical possession of it. Dichi ein lo nami avak ribbis min drabanonu, dichi yesh lo lo gazer. So therefore, I will say again, remember, in all of these cases, we're dealing with rabbinic ribbis at most. So therefore, again, Chazal said, these are the two ways that a future forward contract for produce works. Either number one, the price is known. If the price is known, then aloch lamaisa, it's readily available. If it's readily available, then we look at it as if Reuven has already delivered it to Shimon, and therefore Shimon's in possession of the produce. Okay, that's possibility one. Possibility two is yeshlo. If Reuven himself actually has the produce, then when Shimon gives him the money, it's as if Shimon takes possession. Shimon already has it, even though he hasn't taken physical possession, and therefore no problem with ribbis. V'ala avet shal anovim. So also you can do this with any type of produce, on a vat of grapes, v'ala ma'aton shal zisim, or ultimately again on a vat of olives, v'al ha'beitzim shal yotzer. So this is interesting, balls of clay of a potter. Right, let's say again, the potter has, I want to buy pottery. So I go over to Reuven. Reuven has balls of clay, and we lock in a price. So that's a case of yeshlo. He has the balls of clay already, even though, again, he has not yet made the pottery. Bala sid, misha shaku bekivshan. And same thing I will say, from making lime, so the moment that they put the ingredients into the pot to make the lime, ultimately, again, that's yeshlo. Okay, the Gemara goes weiter. Uposek imo ala zeval kol imo sashana. And I will say, Allah halamaisa. So again, Rashi just points out that Al-Beitzim Shal Yotzer, Posikim Ayotzer, Al-Akaderos, Be'ezer Shar Shiyirtzer, Fafapi Shal Yotzer Shar. So I will say, this would be, let's say I want to go over to Reuven and I want to buy pottery. And again, let's say the price for pottery has not yet come out for the season, but Reuven has balls of clay. So because he had balls of clay, therefore, Allah halamaisa, it's Yeshlo, and therefore, again, the transaction is permitted. So bottom line, there are two, we've seen this already. Psika laperos, let's go through the concern. When I have a future contract for produce, the concern is I'm locking it in at a particular price right now, but I'm not receiving it till later. So the concern is maybe I'll get more, right? Maybe I'll get more than ultimately, again, I originally thought I was gonna get, and we run into a potential ribbis issue. This is not ribbis daraisa, this is ribbis drabanan. Because remember, ribbis daraisa is only by loans, so this is by commercial transaction, so ribbis drabanan. Chazal said that essentially, if you satisfy one of two criteria, either yatsashar, the price of the produce is known, or yeshlo, or the seller has the produce in his possession. Even though, again, in both of these cases, Shimon, the purchaser, is not taking possession of it until later on. As long as you have one of those two criteria, it is not a ribbis transaction. Incredible. Uposik imo ala zevel ko imo sashana. So we'll say you could go ahead and enter into a future contract for zevel, for manure, the entire year. Rabbi Yossi Omer, in poskin ala zevel, ele imkein haisalo zevel ba'ashpa. Rabbi Yossi says, no, it's not true. You can only contract with Zevel, with manure, future contract for manure, if the seller has manure. Ba'ashpa, in literally again in the garbage dump. The chum matirim, chum permit. This again, we'll see exactly what this machlokes is in the Gemara. Posik imo bishara gavoa. But ultimately, again, he could go ahead and he literally posik imo bishara gavoa. So you're going to see what this means as well. This means Rashi says im yifchos hashar mimashu achshav titin lo kishara zol. So also we're going to see over here that halacha lemaisa in a situation of a price fluctuation, the purchaser has the ability to get the better of the two deals. Rashi says, it's the last short line in Rashi, if the price of whatever you're buying, whatever you're locking in the future contract goes down, ultimately, again, the borrower could pay the lender, or actually the purchaser could pay the seller the lower price. Okay, so we'll see exactly why that is. So now, if the price goes down, the purchaser has the ability to pay the lower price. All right. I'm sorry. So we'll see in the Gemara exactly what this machlokes is, but Rabbi Yehuda takes it a step further. Rabbi Yehuda says that in general, whenever the price goes down, the purchaser could always say to the seller, listen, we transacted to buy a bushel of wheat at $1,000. Now the price of wheat has gone down. So either honor the new lower price or give me back my money. Okay, so we'll see in the Gemara exactly what that is referring to. Fine, let's go weiter. Says the Gemara, I'm Rabbi Yassi. Let's get a little weiter over here. I'm Rabbi Yassi, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. So remember again, the first thing the Mishnah taught me was this concept that halacha lemaisa, that yatsa hashar, that if the price of the commodity is known, then you can enter into a future contract. Now the Gemara is going to ask, how do you determine, in other words, what's called yatsa hashar, what's called the price is established? So I'm Rabbi Asi, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, in poskin al shar shebashok. You can't use the pricing in the marketplace. I'm Rabbi Zila Rabbi Asi, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, afilu kidurmus hazeh, even like the central marketplace. And there's also, like Rashi points out, there are different types of marketplaces. There's like a small shuk, a small marketplace, but then there's like a central market. See, telling me, generally, the central marketplace reflects the normative pricing. So I don't understand. So even the pricing in the central marketplace is not called Yatz Hashar, is not called that pricing has been established. So Amar Leh, lo. He said no. So the Gemara says, Amar Leh, lo. Sorry. Amar Leh, lo Amar Rabbi Yochanan Ela B'shuk Shalayaris. I'm sorry. De lo kvi tar aihu. So we'll say, no. Rabbi Yochanan meant you don't establish general pricing based on the smaller marketplaces. Literally, again, the marketplaces of the individuals, of the villages. Rather, when establishing market value, we look at like the central marketplaces. But the small little marketplaces, what you see things selling for over there, does not necessarily reflective of the general marketplace. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, "Ela ulaman de salak adaitin meikara." Dem Rabbi Yochanan afilu kidurmas hazeh. Ela mas tzerbosei. So now, in the Havamina, we thought Rabbi Yochanan was saying that even the prices, when they're established in the general marketplace, does not satisfy the criteria of Yatsa Ashar. The Gemara says, using that logic, Elamas Nisim Diktani in Poskin Alaperos Ash Yatsa Ashar. So the Gemara says, Yatsa Ashar Hechi Mishkachasla. So we'll say if Rabbi Yochanan, in the Havamina, if Rabbi Yochanan was going to say that even market prices found in the general marketplace is not called Yatsa Ashar, then how would you ever establish Yatsa Ashar? To which the Gemara says, Masnis in the Chiti the Akalbi the Arbi the Mashuch Taret Fe. So we'll say perhaps the way we in the Havamina, it's not how we paskin, but the Havamina is that maybe Yatsa Ashar market pricing is established, Rashi says over here, the Avli be Akalbi the Arbi, Mishiaschil Balebatin the Otre Peros, Lifkos Otre Same, Usfinos Baos Benar Medios Tvolimkar. So I'll say, so apparently, after they exhaust the initial supply of produce, they would open up storehouses and ships would bring in produce. At that point, there was a lot more product available on the market. Prices would lower and kind of settle at an average rate that they would remain at for a longer amount of time. So in the Havamina, one might have thought that that's the pricing That's the pricing that establishes Yatsa Hashar. Kamashmola know that Yatsa Hashar ultimately is when Yatsa Hashar is the market, the price as established in the general central marketplace. Incredible. Well, let's go a little bit weiter. Tanrabanon in postnal appears as Yatsa Hashar. So remember again, you can't do future forward contracts for produce until you have a set market price. Sorry. As Yatsa Hashar, poskin afapi she'in laze, yesh laze. So ultimately, again, halacha lemaisa, once the market price has been established, then under those circumstances, you could do a future forward contract. Why? Again, I will say the logic being that halacha lemaisa, having an established price is reflective, at least in terms of the Gemara, is reflective of what we'll call established or normative supply. Because that's when the market kind of evens out. When there's enough produce to be able to take care of everyone's needs, that's when the pricing evens out. So therefore, again, at that point, even if the seller himself doesn't have the commodity, halacha lemaisa, it's easily attainable. Because it's easily attainable, it's as if the seller has it and as if he's transferred it to the purchaser already, thereby obviating any concern of rabbinic grip. So I will say, we'll stop over here for today. Again, there are more examples of this, but we'll stop over here for today. I will say, tremendous kach. I'm sorry that I can't be there with you in person, but at least we have a great schos baruch shem to learn together virtually. Wishing everyone a good night of Shabbos, a beautiful Shabbos Kodesh, and halavai, besoros tovos for all of Klal Yisrael.